B-Pod Studios.
They work.
Arr, matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Near point now, Pastrnak shoots, deflected, and it sails behind the net. Zaitsev didn't get much on it. 9 seconds left. Far point now, Marchand. Not a lot of time. Pastrnak with five. Blocks in, right of the net. Krejci fires. Pastrnak shoots, block, rebound. Blocked again, and the horn sounds. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Both of those blocks were by Marner out in the high slot. Tavares had no stick. Marner got down and blocked. The first one came right back to Pastrnak. Tried it again, and Marner got a piece of that one as well.
This is not what I thought. Ty Anderson is here with us. Hello, Ty.
How you doing?
I had a mental gap on your last name. I wanted to call you three different things other than Anderson.
What was it? What were they?
I mean, just dumb stuff. Ty Law, Ty whatever. I mean, I just, for a momentary hiccup, I wanted to call you something else. Ty Anderson in to talk about Bruins with us here this morning on Zolak and Bertrand. Hardy and Ty filling in here for the first couple hours this morning. As one thing just right off the bat here, there is a funeral taking place this morning, and I know Felger mentioned this a couple of days ago. I don't know if we ever like really took the time, because this has been something that's been going on for weeks and months. One of our most important people here at the radio station, his name is Rick Radzik. He lost his wife, Lizelle, recently after a battle with cancer, and something that we have been, of course, had known about for many months now. And something that was pretty much kept, to friends of the family and coworkers and things like that. Lizelle passed away last week, and the funeral is taking place today. And I just want to take this opportunity to express my condolences to Rick and his entire family, and to everybody who was, you know, touched by her, and really the community and the outpouring of support that, you know, saw last night at the wake. And obviously, you know, we still are putting shows on the air here, so it's not by virtue of any of us not wanting to be there this morning. I know a lot of people are, and a lot of people are thinking about Rick and his family at this time. So that's why the momentary hiccup here in the programming, which will resume later on today. So the thoughts and prayers. Continued thoughts and prayers to Rick and his family over the loss of his wife, Liesl, who is the funeral is taking place here this morning. And there's a lot of people whose thoughts have been there, you know, recently, and we'll continue that way for a while. It's tough to talk about, but I felt it bared mentioning. Okay, on to much less important matters, Ty, for the Bruins, who dropped the first of these two games in Toronto last night. This is not how I saw things going. And I just, from the outset, I want to ask you, as we kind of get into this now, the Bruins now trail 2-1 in this best of seven. I would not have been shocked to find out that after four, that maybe it was like a 3-1 margin for the Bruins at that point. I thought it would have happened in a... in one of those Toronto games. I didn't expect Toronto to get one from the jump, game one at the Garden, and I didn't expect them to come storming back the way they did last night. This is not what I thought about this Toronto team. I want to know what you thought going into this, and I heard you talking a lot about this with Tutcher and Rich before, so I don't know what your, you know, forget about your prediction or anything, but what did your gut tell you about this series before it started?
My gut told me that after game two, the Bruins were in the driver's seat, and they had found the formula, if you will, to beat the Maple Leafs. Now here we are, game four, and I'm almost sort of panicking that the Bruins will make an adjustment before then. You know, because if you go down 3-1, it's too late. I didn't see this coming. I did not see this response coming from Toronto, where they were okay with the physicality and then matching it in game three. I didn't think they could do that, but they found the way to do it, you know, in a smart manner. They've taken David Pastrnak completely out of this series by being physical with him and really just annoying him. He looks absolutely rattled. He doesn't look like the guy that scored 38 goals in the regular season. And right now, I think you're just seeing the Bruins. They're shooting themselves in the foot like way more than I ever thought they would against this team, because I viewed the Maple Leafs as a mental midget. I really did.
So before the series, I kind of thought of them the same way, as being, if nothing else, just a little soft in the postseason. You know, good team, talented hockey team, speedy hockey team. I've got a lot of respect for Mike Babcock. But in terms of the rest of the team, they didn't scare me at all. You know, as someone who's you know, wanting to see the Bruins succeed and go through this thing, I said, okay, Toronto's not the problem. And call it, you know, the classic case of looking ahead and, you know, really thinking about Tampa Bay. You want to be concerned about something. You can be concerned about the Lightning. Now, there's, you know, that team's a wagon. That team is going to be something to contend with. We'll get to that later. And maybe how wrong I was and a lot of people were about that.
The whole world.
Yeah, but from the start, I did not expect, A, Toronto to look as engaged and as focused and as determined as they did in game one, and for the Bruins to come out, quite frankly, a little bit flat. Now, like you, after game two, I said, okay, momentum has swung back. Now the Bruins found their identity, to quote Claude Julien from years ago. Now they found it again. That was the Bruins team that you were thinking about and I was thinking about for much of this season in game two on Saturday night. That's who they are. They can play fast, but they can play physical. They can control the puck in the neutral zone. They can forecheck. They can backcheck. They can do all the things necessary. And whatever you thought of the goaltender situation, we'll get to that again a little bit more in depth later too. But whatever you thought of the goaltender situation, you thought Tuukka Rask, at the very least, has the capability of going in there and having a good game, which he did on Saturday night. And I said, okay, this is it now. Toronto got their game, but they'll be lucky to get another one. That game looked a lot different last night. That Toronto team was re-engaged. The momentum had not swung. I think momentum might be a bit of a fallacy at this point. I'm going to stop talking about it because it looked like it was all Toronto last night. And the first period was fantastic. After that, it was all Toronto.
It was, and you look at how they get their goals, too. They're making the Bruins, you know, make Toronto-like mistakes, turning pucks over in their own zone, passing it to nobody, and next thing you know, it's in the net. I mean, that's how the Bruins won last year's series against the Leafs, and now you've seen it flipped. It's flipped now between, to your point, games 1, 2, and 3 now. So in game 4, I'd like to think that the Bruins get it back, and they draw back even and come back to Boston's 2-2, and hey, how can you be upset? But right now, I just think the scariest part is that, you know, you can't get a read on this team. Let's just break it down this way. There's been 3 games. The Bruins have looked bad, like legitimately bad in 2 out of the 3 games. And that's worrisome to me because this team, they didn't have these stretches in the regular season. It seemed that as if they'd be on fire, steamrolling teams, or they'd be losing 3 games in a row. They never had sort of this great one night, bad the next. Like, it just feels like they're finding the absolute worst time to resort to being just an inconsistent bunch that is not getting what they need in all 3 phases of the game at the worst possible time.
All right, so we're going to be taking your calls on this at 617-779-0985. Ty and I are holding down the fort here for the first couple hours. Pretty much going to be all Bruins, Maple Leafs after the 3-2 win for Toronto last night. They now go up 2-1 in the series. Breaking it down into just a little bit, Ty, from what I saw last night, the speed of Toronto seemed bothersome to the Bruins last night, especially, and I'll borrow this from Jake DeBrusque. He said it wasn't so much what they were doing in the Bruins zone, and the way they were controlling the puck down there. He said it was their speed through the neutral zone. It was the way they were getting out of theirs and into the Bruins zone, and that's where he feels the game was lost last night. Do you feel that way?
I do, and that was the case in game one, too. Like, this Bruins defense is not really built to do this sort of run-and-gun kind of game. Like, they can't do it. This is where Chara looks bad. Like this is where they can make Chara look like he's 41 years old and 6'9".
Right.
It's these style of games, and I think that's bad news for the Bruins. They need to sort of clog it up a little bit. They need to try to match Toronto in that game. They need to eliminate the stretch pass, because I think when you see the stretch pass in a Bruins game, it's bad news. It means they're trying to cheat. They're basically trying to cheat their system to get some quick goals. And then when you see the Leafs doing it, that means that they're getting the Bruins to bite and they're getting their chances. So when I see a stretch pass in a Bruins-Leafs game, I almost know that the Bruins are in trouble. Like that is the sure sign that they're going to have a rough night, and they're not going to be as consistent as you'd like, and that they're going to be chasing the game. So I thought there was too much of that last night. I think for me, the biggest thing that worries me is that they didn't take advantage of Nazem Kadri being out of this lineup. Like, I thought with him being gone, William Nylander moves to center. That's one of their better players through the neutral zone. He didn't have a great night, but didn't affect them. Like, they didn't take advantage of that.
And it was, and from what I understood too, that was supposed to affect that line more than anything. You take him off the wing, and they lose a lot of weaponry on that side. It's like, he's not wasted as a center, but that's really not his position. It didn't seem to bother him last night.
No, it really didn't. And this is where, you know, you have your depth there on your top six with Mitch Marner and John Tavares and Austin Matthews. They are so high end and so skilled that they can get away with Nylander playing center, it turns out, and especially if you don't change up your matchups. Like, you know, this Bergeron versus Tavares matchup, the Bruins are losing it. This is the first time all year the Bruins and that Bergeron line have lost a matchup like this. They're getting outshot. They're getting outscored. I think they have the advantage in possession, but who cares if you're not actually getting shots on net and getting goals. So that worries me. You know, if I'm Bruce Cassidy, I don't know how you can continue rolling this line out there when you look at that mismatch we're talking about with Nylander at center. You have to do little things here to try to get optimal matchups. And I asked him after game one, why didn't you change up the lines? And he said, it's the playoffs. I don't want to do that now. When we do that regular season, we're rewarding guys. You should reward guys right now. You shouldn't be saying, oh, I have to keep this guy as my second line right wing or my first line right wing because he played well in the regular season. No, you need to shake up and try to win these games. These are 60-minute seasons now.
Yeah. All right, so let's take your calls on this, and we'll keep rolling here with the Bruins. 617-779-0985. Hardy and Ty Anderson in this morning for Zolak and Bertrand.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Playoffs. Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What's up?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Yeah, whatever.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Squeeze to the far side. Here's Johnsson. Back of the net, stolen by Carlo. He'll chip it ahead, but not out. Held in far point, Riley.
Just under too much pressure to get a lot on that.
Now back of the net, here's Tavares, left of the cage, backhand, and they score. It's backhanded home by Andreas Johnsson. As the puck hopped out in front, the Leafs were able to keep the puck in at the far point, and now the Bruins are trailing 3-1.
Is that necessary, Tom? Is this... And again... Their goal song, every single goal, this is it? This is their Zombie Nation?
This is their Zombie Nation.
Has been for a long time?
No, this is like the first year, I think.
Okay.
They're ruining this song. It's killing me.
And some, look. Oh, you were a big fan of this beforehand?
I'm a big fan of this song, absolutely.
I really don't have strong feelings one way or the other about Hall & Oates.
You may have heard the song in every hold music ever.
Every wedding.
It sounds like a Farrelly Brothers soundtrack song, right? They would throw this in ironically at some point. Well, there's a bunch of mishaps going on, and the person's dreams really aren't coming true, but it's kind of bouncing in the background while there's some physical comedy taking place on the screen. No dialogue.
It's in 500 Days of Summer. I know that. I'm trying to think what else, though.
Is that a Adam Sandler?
No, that's Zooey Deschanel, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You remember this movie?
No, 500 Days of Summer?
Yeah.
What's it about?
So he's like obsessed with this girl he meets in like an elevator. And like she walks out of the elevator and they start playing the song. And he's like, so he's like in love and all this stuff. And it comes to find out he's kind of like, you know, he's trying to make his dreams come true with this girl that he's saying is like, oh, this is my dream girl. But she's not really his dream girl. So not a great, it's actually a really depressing movie now that I'm like describing it out loud.
All right, great. Okay. That's I got a problem with most goal and celebration songs. I got a problem with the Patriots touchdown song. I definitely have, and I know it's tradition, but Dirty Water at the Bruins. Is there a more anticlimactic song to hear at the end of a Bruins win? Boom, boom, boom. Boom, ba-dum, 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 dum, dum.
It works for baseball, not hockey. Is that what you're saying?
No, it doesn't work. It does not work.
I like when you hear it after a Red Sox walk-off. That's the only time I like it.
Is the Bruins play it too, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to the calls. 617-779-0985. Bruins are down 2-1 in the best of seven to the Maple Leafs after the 3-2 loss last night. We begin with Frank the Tank. Frank, what's going on?
What's going on, boys? Actually, the Bruins started playing Dirty Water first before the Red Sox. They stole it from the Bruins, just so you know. Look, the thing, game one was game one. Toronto came out and they played a great game and whatever. I don't think you shot yourself in the foot in that game. You just, the coaches just didn't have the guys ready. I put a lot of that first game on Cassidy. But last night, you just shot yourself in the foot. I mean, you literally peed in the toilet and then drank it. That's how bad you were last night.
Oh, my goodness, Frank.
It's just three times in the second period, and you can't get the puck out of your own zone, and bang, one, two, three, there's the game. That last night was absolutely, without a doubt, more infuriating than game one. You absolutely shot yourself in the foot. You come back home down 3-1, you're not winning this series.
I don't love their chances, Frank. And I got to say, that is a better example and I think a better explanation. If you want to encapsulate it, I heard a lot of this. Oh, it was a special teams night. You know, they got one, you know, they got a power play goal. And was, you know, we missed on the power play. Do you look at that game last night as all they did was they beat you on special teams and that's how they won the game?
No.
I think it goes a lot deeper than that.
You got Torrey Krug losing a battle to a replacement-level player, Tyler Ennis. Like, Tyler Ennis, like, fine player, sure.
Did he lose the battle, or did Krug just lose the puck for a second? To me, it looked like he just lost the puck.
Yeah, and then he can't recover, though, and now they're stuck in their own zone, and it's a goal. And that's something that, this time of year, listen, if Torrey Krug's getting bodied by, you know, Tom Wilson, I'm like, oh, well, that's a huge dude going against a 5'9" guy. Tyler Ennis is the same size. He hasn't been playing these first two games of the series. You got to get it out. Like, you can't have these mistakes happening this time of year in this game specifically in that building. So I look at that frustrates me. And then I look the Brandon Carlo clip we played coming back. You got to do something better than that there, man. Like Carlo, I think, has been an issue for this team in this series. I thought game two, he was fine. Everyone was fine in game two, though. So maybe that's not the best way to judge him. So you need more out of this pairing. They can't be getting bodied like this and making these mistakes that you're talking about, because it's not a special teams battle. It's a we can't get the puck out of our own zone battle.
How about Cassidy not having these guys ready to go?
I do think that was a noticeable thing in Monday night's game.
Game one and
last night.
I'd say game one more so than last night, because I thought they came out pretty well last night. And I just, to me, it's, and again, at the risk of sounding like, you know, just being a, you know, a good loser about this, I give credit to Toronto. They, for the most part, just outplayed you last night. And we're going to get to the goalies here in a second. Freddie's fantastic. Anderson is doing a hell of a job back there. As good as Tuukka has been so far in this series, Anderson's been unreal. Like, so much better than I thought he was going to be. So I give credit to him. I give credit to the Leafs last night for not allowing any kind of momentum from Saturday night to carry over. It's like, no, we're in our building. We're the Toronto Maple Leafs, for crying out loud. We can skate better than them. We've got some ways of getting the puck out of our zone through the neutral zone and begin the attack right away. And they capitalized on a couple of mistakes. I mean, really, coming out flat last night, I didn't think that was an issue. Game one, it was. And I also think that is a bit of an anomaly for a Bruce Cassidy team. Something we talked about with Claude a lot. Haven't talked about it that much with Bruce Cassidy.
It was almost constant with Claude the final few years. Oh. I was like, wait, why don't they have the jump? This is a must win. You know, last night, though.
Why aren't they playing like it?
I think they had a considerable amount of jump. It's just a matter of matching it. I don't know if they were a little bit gun shy of the fact that maybe they're going to get penalized for it, but they didn't have the same oomph that they had on Saturday. And people have said you can't play like that every night. No, you can't, but you can almost do it for one period in a road building and try to put them on their heels. I don't think they did a good enough job of that last night.
All right, let's go to Dan in Kingston. Dan, you're on with Hardy and Ty Anderson in on Zolak and Bertrand here this morning. What's up, Dan?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So there are two things that stood out to me last night, and there were kind of small things, but I'd love to hear what you guys think. The first one is, you know, game two, we came out hitting and hitting and hitting and hitting. Last night, especially DeBrusk, Pasternak, they're getting targeted up, down, left, and right, but nobody on the Bruins wanted to finish their check. There was a lot of avoiding checks, or at least that's what it looked like to me. And then the other thing I'd love to hear you guys talk about is, it was eye-opening when we went on the power play, Pasternak had the helmet issue, Krejci went out, and they didn't know what to do. That power play unit did not know what to do with Krejci on the ice instead of Pasternak. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that.
All right, Ty, go ahead. Let's do the power play, the first power play unit first.
So I hated their night. I thought they had an absolutely garbage night. Torrey Krug looked at 60% of what he normally is at the very most. Jake DeBrusk didn't look like 100% either. And then you're talking about guys that are just deferring. Like, they're not taking the shots. And we talk about Freddie Anderson being great, and he's played well. I'm not disputing that. But have the Bruins made him work on the power play? I don't think they have.
Not so much on the power play. And the second power play, they didn't get off a shot last night. Or on their last power play.
Two out of three of their power plays, they had zero shots.
Which is inexcusable. Yeah. It's inexcusable, especially with a power play that has the talent on it like they do. Now, Krug, if he does look 60%, maybe he is concussed. Maybe he beat the test. Maybe he got into the room after Saturday night and he said, okay, well, I don't have to answer these completely honestly because I want to play. And he got back out there, and nobody necessarily would wish for that. And maybe that's what's going on. Or maybe he was just off. But for whatever reason, the power play wasn't working last night. And when you have opportunities like that, you can't squander them, because these guys have shown you that even strength, they're a much better matchup for the Bruins than I think a lot of people gave them credit for. And they may even overmatch the Bruins in a couple of areas, certainly when it comes to speed and when it comes to getting the puck out of the zone and through the neutral zone. We saw that last night.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Like, this is not last year's team. Like, Tavares changes things for them. And, that's obvious, of course. But now you're seeing it over the course of a seven-game series, how he impacts what they can do. Like I said earlier, he obviously limits what they can do with Bergeron's line, which really adds, you know, puts more stress on the lines two and three to make an impact at five-on-five, which hasn't always been the easiest for them this year. For whatever reason, whether it's personnel or slumps or injuries, those middle two lines have not been consistent enough offensively at 5-on-5. This team as a whole hasn't been a great 5-on-5 team. They've relied a lot on their power play, and when your power play has a 1-for-3 night or 0-for-3 night, whatever it is, and they have one shot on goal, it's not going to work. You need more.
The final chance that they had, and I know it wasn't the power play, but they had pulled Rask, so they had the man advantage. And this is just, you know, it's a microcosm of the night, I think, more than anything. It's not really a tactical thing. It's not really that I'm going to, like, jump up and down about, but their last two tries, you know, last two, I would call them scoring chances, whatever the hell that is, whatever statistician decides what that is. You know, you got the puck in the zone, you got an extra man out there. They seem to be holding the puck just a little bit longer than they needed to. And I'm like, will somebody pull the trigger? Will somebody put the puck on net and see if somebody can't go down there into the dirty area and get some kind of a rebound? But instead, you know, you're looking for your shot. And I understand it's difficult. It's not the same as a power play when you've only got four guys in front. You've got five, you know, you've got five players back and a lot of traffic to deal with. But time is of the essence here, gentlemen. We got 30 seconds left. You need a goal here. You got to put the puck down in there. And they were doing a good enough job of keeping it in the Leaf zone at the end of the game, but a little more urgency.
I hated that with 5 seconds left, David Pastrnak has the puck on a stick and he passes to the right half wall with David Krejci. David Krejci is a right shot. That's not a one-time chance for him.
Thank you.
Krejci has to throw it right back to him.
Thank you.
Now you have 2 seconds left, and you try these two shots that get blocked by Mitch Marner. Great blocks by him, but 5 seconds left. David Pastrnak, you scored 40 goals. Almost 40 goals. You would have scored 50 if you didn't fall and break your thumb. Why are you not shooting?
Why are you sending the puck over to Pastrnak, over to Krejci?
Yep.
From an angle where it's going to be difficult for him to score. Yeah, are you telling me there's no way that you can't move with the puck a little bit? And there was practically no movement away from the puck at the end of that. I'm like, make some guys shift out of position. Get them thinking a little bit. There's a lot of traffic. There's 11 guys down there, and plus the goalie. So
that helps you. That traffic helps you. You have Bergeron and DeBrusk, two of the best net front guys in terms of tipping pucks or redirecting shots. You got to shoot that, man. You can't throw it to David Krejci on the offside and hope he gets a one-timer off. You can't do it.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that drove me nuts a little bit at the very end of the game. Okay, more of your calls. We'll get to all of them here momentarily. Got the update here, and we'll continue. Hardy and Ty Anderson, in for Zolak and Bertrand here on 98.5 The Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sports Hub. Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Turned over by Gardner, sent out in front, Pastrnak shoots, Anderson to save, he looked behind him. Near side, now Marchand up top, McAvoy fires, and Anderson gloves it and holds. Here's Coyle, wheels in, high slot to Backus, right circle, fires, Anderson to save, rebound, set out in front, and Heinen's drive denied. Left of the net, centered, Coyle was there, he couldn't hold the pass, right circle, Backus shoots, Anderson to save. Scrapes it left of the net, centered out in front, Krejci, backhand, Anderson dove out and made the save.
Now, is this a Ty Anderson request? Is this is just Tom Morgan choice? Chevelle, the red.
Never be a Ty Anderson request.
You would not choose Chevelle?
No.
Why not?
It's not my kind of. It's not my kind of music.
What's your kind of music?
I like punk, hardcore, all that kind of stuff.
All right. Well,
this does not fit the bill.
All right. I tell you what. Should we give Ty next choice of song coming back after the next break?
No, it's fine. You don't have to do that.
No, it's already done. If you don't choose a song, there will be silence. So you better choose something.
Bring the Hall & Oates back
here? T-Bone can find anything back there.
So I found...
I think it's a good choice.
People on Twitter were letting me know.
What?
Step Brothers. Hall & Oates, that song is in Step Brothers. Because you were saying there's like a scene in like a Fairly Brothers movie where these guys are all hanging out. It was Step Brothers when they become best friends. And they're running around the house and like they're like taking ninja swords to bags of Doritos and stuff.
When they're doing karate in the garage?
Yeah, they're playing Hall & Oates.
And does it fade out?
It's like, did we just make... Friends?
Yep. You want to do karate in the garage?
Yep.
Well, this is where it belongs.
What I want.
Yeah! The samurai sword on the bag of Doritos?
Yeah. One of the absolute funniest movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's an instant classic.
Crying in theaters the first time I saw it. Just absolutely crying.
You saw Step Brothers in the theater.
I saw it multiple times in theaters. I got kicked out seeing it in theaters.
What?
I was 16 at the time. So it came out.
Were 16 when Step Brothers came out?
Yeah, so it was rated R, so I couldn't go. Like, so I snuck in one day. This was at a movie theater down by the Cape, and we were on vacation. And the theater got like sold out or something because... They were going through the aisles with the flash. I'm like, oh, no, here we go. And I bought a ticket to some other garbage. So I'm like, I'm kind of leaning down in the seat. And the guy's like, hey, can I see your ticket? And I was like, I lost it. He's like, well, you got to go. I'm like, no, I can stay. And he's like, no, you have to go. And it ended with me basically yelling through the glass at this theater manager being like, real big, man. You're a real big man. So I was a really angry 16-year-old. I didn't get to see Step Brothers for like the third time in theaters.
Well, seeing how you look like you're about 17 right now, I can only imagine what you looked like as a 16-year-old.
Like an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Lucky they didn't call social services on you. All right, let's go to the phone. 617-779-0985. Bruins lose last night. They're down 2-1 in the best of seven. To the Maple Leafs, we go to Mark in Georgetown. Mark, you're on with Hardy and Ty Anderson in for Zoe and Beetle. What's up, Mark?
What's up, Hardy? What's going on, man?
This is it.
Yeah, man, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, right? When I called in with you guys, that it's a tough, and Ty mentioned it earlier. It's a tough pace to keep that they came up with in game two. I mean, playoffs, I feel like, are all about controlled emotion and kind of like not getting too high, not getting too low, kind of just kind of trying to get yourself ready for the next game and come out and do what you have to do to win that one game. First off, I'm shocked nobody's mentioned yet that absolute highway garbage hooking call on Grizzly. That was a joke. I mean, and they scored in the power play. Isn't that the penalty that how do you call it, that they that the game-winning power play goal came on?
Yeah, but there was a makeup call, like, on the very next series. Was that, Ty, wasn't there a makeup call? There was the hook and call, but then there was the hold. I think they got Toronto for a hold. A couple minutes later, if that was a hook, then the other one was a hold. Not, and it wasn't a hook and it wasn't a hold, but it felt like a makeup call came very soon after that.
Right, and at the same time, we still gave up the game-winning goal on that penalty kill. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Mark, but it's like then when you get the power play going on the makeup call, go score on the power play, get a shot off on the power play. I'm not blaming the officials on that last night. No way.
No, it's hard to do that because I think you just outplayed in so many different areas that I don't like falling back on that if it's something very egregious. And last night was not a good night for them. I thought the Backus call that the Bruins actually got a power play out of, it was the Ron Haynes interference. I was like, that's a little weak, but sure. Like, I think the standard was sort of set early that this was going to be a tighter game than Saturday. Well, Saturday was prison rules, but Monday was not.
Now, third period, I thought they let some calls go, you know, late in the game, which I don't think anybody minds.
Kuhlman
got
away with one. He pulled a guy down from behind. I was like, oh, there's one you just got away with.
Okay. So, again, that game was not decided by the refs last night. That's all I'm saying. I didn't mean to yell, Mark, but I mean, honestly. Jim in New Hampshire, what do you got for us, Jim?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Just watching that game last night and stuff like going on with the defensive pairings and stuff, I still think it's a problem with the Bruins size-wise. You look at all the playoff rosters of all the teams in the playoffs, and the defensemen are a lot bigger and they're a lot more mobile. I mean, Krug and Grizzlack have got some speed. They're nice players, but size kills them in the playoffs because things always change. Camper's not a good defenseman. Carlo's a disappointment. Miller's always hurt. And Chara's getting real old. So what do you really got there? They got to do something over the next summer or so and get some better defensemen.
Well, they're dealing with some injuries. And no one seemed to have a problem with Chara's age until about 2 weeks ago. He was not playing like a man of his age pretty much all season long. I didn't have a problem with it.
Entering the postseason, doing radio interviews in other cities, they're like, what makes him so good still? Like,
yeah.
So people still think that he's good. I mean, there's just not a good matchup for him. Like, out of all the teams that they would play in the playoffs, I think the Leafs presented the most problems for Chara. And if they were playing Tampa or Columbus, you'd be talking about what a great job Chara's doing because they're a bigger roster and he uses his reach to his advantage. Right now, he's matched up against one of the best players in the NHL, Mitch Marner. He's not going to walk over him.
Jeff, he had a great comment last night, and he's going to join us coming up at 10:50 here, that several times last night, Toronto's coming through with such speed, in order to get into position, make a play on the puck, the Bruins have to turn their backs to the oncoming rush. And that puts you at a disadvantage. You know, if you're facing it and you're standing guys up at the blue line and you're stopping things before they develop, that's one thing. Or if you're at least moving backwards well enough to where you can try and break things up and still face the oncoming attack, that's fine. As soon as you get that defender spun around and chase him with it, you're not going to win that battle most times, and it puts you at a real defensive disadvantage to try and stop anything from going on. Conversely, in the other end, when they were in the Toronto end, they were getting the pucks out a lot easier than the Bruins were getting their pucks out last night. And they weren't making them fight. They weren't making them, you know, really, really dig along the boards and maintaining a lot of possession down in the Toronto zone and getting those guys tired and frustrated. They were clearing the puck, not, I wouldn't say with relative ease, but certainly easier than the Bruins had getting the puck out of their end last night. And everything just kind of sways. It starts tilting that way in terms of, like, the, you know, the energy that you're bringing and how much you're expending. And it's always tougher to, you know, bring that energy on defense than it is on a rush, especially when you've got like an odd man break. And pretty soon the game starts to tilt in that direction. And it's really hard to tilt it back against a team that you already have matchup issues with in the first place.
Yeah. And I think you can always tell how much jump a team has within the first 15 minutes or so. And you were seeing Bruins falling, like they were just falling for no reason. There's no one around them. They'd just be falling, or they'd collide, or they'd pass to the wrong team. And you go, huh, okay, it's me one of these kind of nights. And that's when you need to rely on your skill or you know, some of your depth players to score a greasy goal. And I don't know if they had the commitment. I don't know if they could afford it, to your point, because They didn't have sustained zone time. They didn't have sustained pressure. They didn't really turn it on in waves, if you will, having shift after shift until there's about 6 minutes left in the third period, which is you're operating with a very small window here versus, you know, the first 55 or so you didn't do anything with. So that was frustrating, I think, if you're a Bruins fan. And with Chara, I mean, to your point, to Jaffe's point he made last night, this is what the Blackhawks did in 2013, and this is what the Canadiens did in 2014. If you can get him spinning and moving, he becomes less effective. And this is where they missed John Moore. They signed John Moore probably for this series. Like, realistically, they signed him for A, injuries, of course, but B, for this series, a high-flying kind of run-and-gun series, because John Moore is probably their best skating defenseman, really. And I didn't want to give him 5 years like they did, but I understood it because they're putting a premium on skating, and he's their best player in that department. So they miss him right now, and you know he's another player, too, that has some size, too, as the caller was mentioning. I think John Moore's about 6'2 or 6'3. So he has the skating and the size that I think you're missing on that back end right now.
All right. As I said, we're going to talk with Billy Jaffe. Coming up next, talking Bruins here. Hardy and Ty Anderson in for Zolak and Bertrand.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
That's a 3-inch difference between those two guys.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Everybody, everybody.
Is this Ty's selection? I can't believe he went with this. Dude, this isn't hardcore.
No, this is my selection.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll find out what that is later on. But right now on the Volks, what
I don't know
is Jaffe on? Where is he? I don't see him. Tom, this thing's broken. You might have to pull him up for him. Oh no, I got him on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Forgive me, Billy. I'm new around here. Billy Jaffe, I'm with Hardy and Ty Anderson. What's going on, Billy?
You're anything but new, Hardy. You're anything but new. That you're an old grizzled vet. You're just having a little execution issue right now. That's it. That's all it is, like the Bruins last night.
There's a lot of that going around. You were you and Barry were fantastic last night, breaking down the game, I got to say.
Thank you.
I just used one of your – I don't know if it was you or Barry who said last night something about, you know, these defenders getting spun around and having to chase after the puck in their own zone last night, and how detrimental that is, especially when you're going up against a team that's fast through the neutral zone and they've kind of got the jump on you anyway, and how that can just wear down the team throughout 60 minutes.
You know, it's not about, it's not about being heavy. Everybody's talking about heavy and physical hockey. And I thought, you know, game two, and this isn't exactly, I would call rocket science analysis here. Game two was phenomenally physical from a Bruins perspective, right? Okay. And people said, oh, it's going to wear down the opponent. It's hard to play at that level all the time. But what Toronto did last night, instead of going after the Bruins with this bone-crushing hit, switching, and they tried to do a bit in game two. They tried to respond. They were just heavy on the Bruins at all time with regard to getting the puck in, turning them. If you're a defender, I call it the tenderization process. If you're a defender and you have to go back and repeatedly get the puck, and whether you get hit hard or just enough, it's the repeated impact of the opponent that wears you down. It sucks. It absolutely sucks, because then you start thinking, oh man, I got to go get the puck for the second time this shift, the third time, or I got to look out for this guy again. He's just going to bump me. He may not crush me, but he's going to bump me. And it starts to wear on you mentally and physically.
I would agree with that. And I think, well, speaking of that point, how would you assess Brandon Carlo's first three games of Stanley Cup playoffs?
I thought it was cautious, like a lot of the team, on game one, nervous in game one. I thought it was better in game two, and then I'm seeing moments of real goodness from him now, and there's still a few hiccups here and there. But you know, here's the thing: we have this wonderful tendency to overanalyze every single thing. Mistakes are going to be made. I think that this game one was an obvious nerve game. I didn't think that he played well, really well there at all. Game two was better, and I thought last night was. I mean, again, not, you know, is this great analysis? But it was good. It was fine. You know, mistakes, yeah, but I thought for the most part he's trying to do his job. Like, Charlie McAvoy's getting the brunt of those heavy-duty minutes, you know, with Chara there. Carlo, you know, if we can get a little bit more out of him, you know, he should be a guy that's playing above 20 minutes as well. That's where his game should be at, Ty.
All right, well, let's talk about the first line a little bit because, you know,
tough.
Seeing zeros across the board for those guys, that is certainly not something that we're accustomed to. Is there going to be some shuffling? Is there going to be something that Cassidy feels like he needs to do there to, I don't know, change up the chemistry a little bit?
Well, you know, here's the thing. He's been at times the mad scientist in the games, and for the most part, his concoctions, you know, Bruce Cassidy's, you know, manipulations of the lineup have worked really well throughout the regular season and everything. The question is, he seems less ready to do that right now because of his belief in this top line. I don't think that's smoke and mirrors, but I do think, and you know, we talked about it at the end of our show last night, I think it's a short leash. You know, he can manipulate the lineup quickly by moving Pasternak down or double shifting him here and there. But I'm almost wondering if he's a little hesitant to do it. I don't know if you guys agree or Ty agrees or not here because of the emotional move that it may have against the team, even though I think physically it's the right thing to do. I actually think you start Pasternak with Krejci a few times. I think you do. And as I think Krejci's played real well, and I think DeBrusk has played well too. You know, he had the crazy game too where I thought he was a force. I thought he was okay last night. But I don't know. I mean, mix it up. You know, look, Toronto's playing their top two lines in top 4D a ton. An absolute ton. I mean, they're hardly playing their fourth line, and last night they outplayed the Bruins' fourth line, I guess, by scoring that goal. But if the Bruins can find perhaps just a little spark, that's it. They weren't bad last night. They just weren't great. If they can find a little spark, that could be a significant difference in this series.
Yeah, when you watch this team and you watch these forward groupings right now, do you think when you speak to that point of maybe he believes in the top two lines, do you think he's also a little bit afraid to pull from his third line right now, given the way they're playing, particularly Heinen and Coyle, the chemistry that they may be developing as maybe the team's best line through three games?
No doubt that there's probably a respect factor there because he's probably saying, you know, Bruce is saying to himself, geez, you know what, we wanted Coyle to get going all regular season or, you know, since the trade. And now he's going. So now do I take somebody away from him? There might be a little bit of that. But I don't know if you can wait, Ty, if you can wait around in a best of seven series. It's very different than regular season. If you can wait around and say, well, you know, I don't want to impact the third line when your top two lines get even more minutes. And granted, the third line's getting some minutes. I mean, I don't remember exactly, but Coyle played over 17 minutes last night. That I remember. Heinen had some decent ice time too, but you know, if you're gonna get your top lines going, you're gonna have to. I go back to game one. They were cautious. That's the word I used. I can't see this team remaining cautious when that isn't how Bruce Cassidy has coached throughout the year. So I respect the fact that there has been some. You're waiting it out a little bit to make sure, you know how good this line can be. And his point last night about, look, we're playing against the Tavares line. It's been pretty equal. I don't disagree with that, but the problem is you can't have it, I think, be equal. You need to supersede that line every so often. So I don't know how much longer you wait if it continues to be equal at best.
All right, I got some ideas here, Billy. I'm going to bounce them off. Are you ready? Some strategery, all right?
All right, I like it.
Get the whiteboard out. Here we go here. Now, these guys are a little banged up right now, talking about Torrey Krug, whether or not he was, you know, all there. I don't know, maybe he fudged his way through the protocol in the room the other night. I don't know. So, and he's not the most physical guy anyway, and you're getting guys spun around. You got some speed. Let's go old school, mid-90s Devils. Let's neutral zone trap these guys. Let's take away that speed that they've got through the neutral zone. We'll just bore them to death. we'll bore them to death, we'll bore the audience to death, and we'll just figure out a way to get past the Toronto mm-hmm. here because the matchup is bad and just shut them down in the neutral zone.
Well, then they did that in game two, albeit with a big time physical effort, but it's not far off. You know, the New York Islanders have been doing that, and so is Columbus, actually. Columbus on the road.
Is that what they're doing right now? Because I barely watched any of the Columbus Lightning series.
On the road, that's what they did in game two. Holy smokes. John Tortorella, midway through the game, went to a real steadfast or hard 1-2-2. And it completely threw off the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, they were throwing the puck around. You know, they were a bunch of beer leaguers not wanting to go after it, and they couldn't get anything going. And it was amazing to see. Amazing. Only because it's not – look, I'm not shocked that anybody's losing. I think we all have realized over the years now the NHL playoffs are a brutal yet wonderful battle of attrition, right? And sometimes the lesser team, well, oftentimes can win. But to see Tampa do it and just to fumble the puck around there, they got so frustrated with it. Hardy, your idea isn't that off, but you still don't want to be too much on your heels. But I do think that the Bruins, I do think that they need to take some better routes at times, get a little less fancy with the puck. And I think part of that is that they feel like once they get the puck, they know they've got the capability of doing things with it, but at times it's become too much. And the East-West plays, and we talked about this before Game 1, broke it down for the fans too. The Bruins utilize the East-West, the lateral play, significantly more than, say, the Toronto Maple Leafs do. The Maple Leafs are not a good defending team, except when they can stand up when they have back pressure. And when the Bruins make lateral plays, yep. that allows the back pressure to become more involved. And so I think the Bruins need to do a little bit more north play than lateral plays.
All right. So if you, and you do the look-aheads at the end of each intermission going into the next period. Is would that be your big takeaway and your big suggestion for them for Game 4?
It'll be one of them. I mean, look, they you know...
Other than score on the power or get a shot off on the power play.
Well, the first, that would be nice. But to me, the power play, the first unit power play is just an extension of the issues that the top line has had at times. You know, I mean, to me, last night, that first unit, they did everything at even on the power play that they kind of did at even strength too. Let's also do this. I don't want to be overly negative. Toronto played a hell of a game too. They did. Toronto has showed me something defensively in game one and game three. At least I say it. It's not that I'm saying that the Bruins can't beat them, but I'm just saying sometimes the opponent is also damn good. And last night they played well.
I think I said a half an hour ago, I said, you know, at the risk of sounding like, you know, the ultimate good loser, I said, Toronto's better than I thought they were. They're playing a hell of a hot, they're playing a really good game so far, and Anderson's been good, and they're just a good hockey team. So it's gonna be tough. I mean, obviously, we're already, you know, heading into game four here in a, you know, tight games, and I think we're going to see more good hockey out of Toronto going forward, regardless of what the Bruins do.
Well, I would think so too, but I'll tell you what, if the Bruins can make Toronto work the way that the Bruins have had to work in game one and game three,
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.